Welcome to The Lobbying Show, a podcast about the people in government relations, how they got into it, what their jobs entail, what works, and what doesn't. I'm your host, Jim O'Brien. Stateside Associates. Today we sat down with the two CEOs, Michael Beam and Mark Anderson. They've both been at Stateside for over 25 years. We sat down in their corporate offices just across the river from Washington, D.C. in Arlington, Virginia. We had set up a temporary studio in their conference room where we sat down and interviewed them, and we talked about all the changes they've seen in the business and changes that they're making going forward. Very interesting interview. We really enjoyed sitting down with them. They represent many, many different companies and many different associations in all 50 states. They are at the pinnacle of many different roads in our business, many different services, and these clients and associations turn to Stateside for advice and counsel, not only for information as to what's going on, but as to what they should do in various states. And for you state lobbyists out there, they make recommendations as to which state lobbyists the companies and or associations should hire. So you'd be wise to listen to Michael and Mark as to what they find important. They manage quite a large staff. I think they said 47 people. So they have a lot going on. They were very, very busy the day that we sat down. So I hope you enjoyed it. Stateside Associates, Michael Beam and Mark Anderson. All right. So Mark, you grew up in Berlin, New Hampshire. Is that right? And did you go to high school there?
I went to high school there.
Okay.
And college at the University of New Hampshire.
Okay.
Down south.
Southern New Hampshire. But I like that, down south. And what was your major?
Economics. Okay. And criminal justice.
Wow. And what was your first job out of college?
Well, I went straight to law school from college.
Where'd you go, GW?
I went to GW Law School, yes.
Okay. Very good school. Here in the nation's capital.
Yep.
And how'd you like law school? Did you like it or not like it?
Well, I sort of enjoyed the experience, but it's sort of the time period in which I realized I didn't want to do any litigation type work.
Yeah.
And I was working the whole time. I was in law school at the Department of Justice doing environmental type of work.
Okay.
And which was interesting, but I realized I was much more interested in the policy aspect of it than the litigation aspect.
Creating the policy.
Yeah.
Yeah, being part of that. Okay. So what was your first job? Did you have any interesting internships while you were in law school?
Well, just at the Justice Department.
Okay.
Part internship, part
job. That's pretty interesting.
Job. Started as an internship, ended as a job.
Was that was a difficult internship to get?
Well, I have to admit it was not, because I'm here in D.C. during the school year, so that's how I started doing it. It's very difficult to get it during the summer, but because of the way I started, it was actually...
Oh, great.
Difficult for me.
Well, that was clever.
Yeah.
That was smart. And then what was your first job out of law school?
So I worked for a congressman from New Hampshire.
Okay. Which one?
Out of law school. Richard Sweat. He was a one-term congressman from New Hampshire.
Okay.
And I worked for him during that one term.
And you worked on the Hill?
I worked on the Hill.
And what was your job?
I started out as an assistant and ended up as a legislative assistant.
Okay. And is that, so working on legislation, working on policy, so you're doing just what you wanted to do?
Sure, for a very brief period of time until I started working here, actually.
Okay, so you did that for 2 years or less than 2 years?
Oh, no, not even a year.
Okay.
Probably more like 6 months.
And then you came to Stateside.
Well, I started to work for Stateside on a project while I was working on the Hill.
Okay.
So I worked on a project for General Electric.
Okay.
On an issue that's since become... a huge issue, which is brownfields at the time, was called voluntary remediation programs in the states.
Okay.
And so that's sort of how I started in the business. I wasn't an employee at Stateside. I was just doing this one project for GE.
And then after that, you at some point joined full-time?
Yeah, I actually, a full-time job became available, and I applied for it, and I didn't get it.
So, really?
Yes, that's right.
You didn't get your first job here, and now you're running the joint.
That's right.
Unbelievable.
That's right. So I've had lots of excuses over the years as to why I didn't get that job at first, but I did get it within 3 months of not getting it.
So they corrected their error.
Correct.
And clearly it was an error because now you're CEO.
Yes.
Michael has now joined us. So we just went over Mark's kind of bio up until stateside. So now we can talk about your bio prior to stateside. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Ohio.
Okay.
Middle Ohio.
Okay.
Marion, Ohio, home to Warren G. Harding and a number of large power shovel manufacturers that no longer exist.
Okay.
And I went to Ohio State University after I graduated from high school. And at that time, I went to work in the Ohio House of Representatives while I was at school.
Okay.
When the Republicans were in the minority, which was a long time ago. and they've been in the majority ever since, at least the House has. I got a lot of experience there primarily because when they were in the minority, they weren't very well resourced, and so they leaned heavily on a number of what they called Legislative Service Commission interns and, I mean, college and university employees like right. myself and others. No, we were paid.
Oh, you were paid. Okay.
Not very much, but we were paid.
Okay.
And we got to do a lot of staffing work that would have otherwise been given to professional staff in the majority.
Okay.
At the time.
Okay.
So it was a really good experience. I mean, the experiences ranged from, you know, routine constituent help to work on legislative issues to being able to join much of the Ohio delegation at the 1988 Republican convention.
Oh,
so
okay.
It was a good experience.
And where was the convention?
It was in New Orleans.
Oh,
at the
okay.
time. Yeah.
Okay. So it was a very good experience for you.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
You...
So it was, and in fact, at the time, I mean, it enabled me, we worked very closely with the Republican leadership, both in the House, a little bit with the Senate, both in the minority at the time, although the Senate would take the majority the same year I left. And we got to work with, you know, state legislators who would go on to become, you know, speakers of the House here in, at the United States House of Representatives, John Boehner,
mm-hmm.
Some other legislators who would go on to Congress, Dave Hobson. So really good experience in that respect. And,
okay.
and interesting enough to me at the time that I thought I wanted to move to Washington, D.C. and work for Congress.
And so did you do that?
I worked for then Congressman Mike DeWine briefly when I moved out here, but then the pay wasn't very good. In fact, it may have been non-existent in my case. I just don't remember. Let's put it this way. It was that small that I can't remember. But the House Republicans here were in the minority at the time as well. I didn't see much of a future, at least at the time, while working up at the House. So I just spent some time looking for a job and ended up at a couple other consulting firms and then here.
Okay. And were you rejected on your first offer here or no?
No. I think I was the first or second staff person here.
Really? And then how many employees do you all have now?
What,
48. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big payroll.
It is a big, it's a much bigger payroll than it was at the time, yes.
And then I was actually working for Mike when I first started.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So he was here just before you?
Yeah.
Probably a year.
No, I think it was 3 or 4 years, but yeah. Not very long.
And now you offer, I'm just going to rattle off some of the things you work on. Elections, issue management, legislative tracking, regulatory tracking, local monitoring, utilities tracking, different groups, compliance, special projects. You manage state lobbyists, which is how I've gotten to know stateside. I mean,
it's a lot. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You all
do a lot. The primary business here is state level consulting, and so if you think about retail lobbyists out in the state capitals, or even the retail lobbyists who work Congress and the federal agencies here, we take more of a wholesale approach to supporting our clients, and by that I mean we're helping our clients to develop advocacy plans for multiple states. We're helping our clients to hire the right professionals in the state capitals, to move bills, to kill bills, to engage regulatory proceedings. We help our clients to engage organizations of state and local officials to do everything from brand awareness to influence policy to building relationships with state officials all across, state and local officials all across the country. And then there are the information services offerings that you rattled off, everything from legislative monitoring to regulatory monitoring to local government monitoring to a very broad elections coverage, state and local levels of government. But the difference is, and really the key difference between us and our competitors is, are all the people we have here, some of whom you've spoken with in earlier podcasts.
Yeah.
These are the people who read all of the introduction lists, the legislative introduction lists on a daily basis. These are the people who review the House, Assembly, and Senate journals and closely review the regulatory proceedings and interview regulatory officials for all of that information that we're providing to our clients. It's not a data aggregator service. It's not a keyword service. It's very much people focused, and that's really what certainly, you know, what drives our business here and what brings our clients to us. And I think Mark may have mentioned before I was able to join this that our clients range from, you know, very large corporations to their trade associations to advocacy coalitions to a handful of Department and Defense programs.
And so Mike and I sort of grew up in the two sides of the, they're not sides of the business, but two different sort of expertise that our company contains. And Mike is much more on the legislative side and pretty much grew up in the legislative division of our company, and I on the regulatory side in the regulatory division.
Okay.
And we still, work, both of us work in those fields probably more so than other aspects of the company.
Okay.
So mine tends to be more regulatory agencies, executive branch, and Mike state legislatures.
And state and federal?
Well, we don't really do federal work.
It's just state work.
It's state work.
Okay.
You know, unless there's a federal rulemaking or something that requires some sort of grass tops work.
Right.
Or state engagement.
Engagement.
So okay. There's a state nexus there. Yeah. We might be monitoring it.
Okay.
Movement at the federal level as well.
Well, tracking all, I mean, I know what tracking the legislative side is in all 50 states. The regulatory must be just enormous.
Well, it's enormous, and it's different than the legislative side, which is why we approach it completely differently. And that is, you know, when we started doing this, it was for Amoco, I think, created this within our company back in the early 90s, and they wanted sort of an early warning. I mean, it's sort of easy to go through state registers when things are sort of quasi-fully baked.
Right.
And things are being proposed. But what they wanted and what most of our clients want today in this arena is they want an earlier entryway into the regulatory process. So they wanted to engage the process at the point where regulators were sitting down thinking about what they were going to do and engaging stakeholders at that point. And that's really the entry point we try to introduce all of these issues to our clients. And so it really requires actual phone calls to regulatory agencies. And, you know, more and more there's, you know, obviously much online, you know, meeting notices, all of that kinds of stuff. So it requires a lot more hands-on research. There's not as much, there's not as many ways to automate that type of service.
Right.
Yet.
Right. And do you have software or whatever you use to track the basics? I mean, I know on the legislative side, I think you do. The legislative side is kind of nice in the sense that, you know, it's typically most of them are January to June or whatever it is, and bills are coming out, and it would seem to me, which is why I'm asking, the regulatory piece is a little bit more unwieldy.
It's a little bit more unwieldy, and you know, the reality is we have technology that we use to, I guess, best use our staff and provide the information to our clients in the best way. And in fact, we're about to unveil a major technology investment that we've made this year, but at the end of the day, you're right. The regulatory type of research that needs to be done, much of it is not. It doesn't easily fit into a technology platform.
There's pieces of it that do.
Right.
There's just a lot of aspects of it that don't.
Right. Like I'm just saying, it's very process oriented. And so at the beginning of any kind of a rulemaking, you typically start with the regulatory staff or officials reaching out to stakeholders to collect input, comments, any kind of technical information that they may then need to feed into the regulatory process. And that's actually the time at which you want to capture the rulemaking as it's beginning, because that's when it's starting, even if it's not an official part of that process.
Okay.
Right. And you know, that's also when our clients have the best opportunity to make some kind of impact to it.
Right.
Because at the point where that it's in a register or somewhere further along the process, there's a lot of people who are already defending that rule or have had a lot of input into it.
Right.
And so it's much more difficult at that point to engage the process.
Right. So in our state, it would be akin to when the Regulation Review Committee first meets and starts to consider some regulation. And when are you unveiling this new technology?
The platform? What date?
Yes.
September 18th.
It's really a new interface for our clients. It's going to help our clients to better customize the information that we're delivering to them.
Okay.
It's going to make it a more personal experience for them. It's going to enable them to grab more data that we've collected and curated on our end right now. It's really what, you know, in terms of how the relationship with government affairs managers and their monitoring data and their government affairs firms are working these days. It's, you know, they want more control over the process. They want more control over the information. They want more control about when that information is being sent to them. Just because these little things, these cell phones, you know, get filled up with emails so quickly these days, we're creating a platform, I hope, that will help to better balance the inflow of information to clients. We're also building a back end of that that's going to help expedite the collection and the curation of all that information that we're collecting as well. I mean, we've got a lot of things going on in terms of helping to ease the tremendous workload on our staff in the session months between January and, gosh, these days up through June, July, and California even through August.
Right. Right. And you developed this. This is proprietary to Stateside.
Yes, it's proprietary software.
I mean, it's yours or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting.
It's very exciting, and we're excited to launch it. And I think one of the things we're most excited about is we've been able to really incorporate, you know, all of the value add that our company provides, which is the analysis, the expertise in, you know, our state and local processes, and yet at the same time provide a better technology to provide that information, provide it more quickly, provide it more easily to our clients without giving up on any of the sort of quality parts of our service.
Right. So how do you two divide responsibilities, or how do you two spend your days? I mean, 47, 48 people, that's a lot to
it
manage.
It is a handful. That's a lot of people to manage.
It is. But I don't really know how to answer that question. but
I assume,
Mike and I have worked.
Is there a chief of staff? Chief administrator officer?
No.
No. So it's 2-2. Okay.
No, it's really us.
All right.
And we first of all, we've worked together since 1993. So it's not that we're unfamiliar co-CEOs. So I think the workflow just divides itself naturally among the things we both realize we'd each be better at.
I mean, there's a lot, you know, you're right. Every day that we walk into the office, there's a tremendous amount of client work to do. And certainly that's the highest priority here. The second highest priority is making sure we pay the bills and, you know, collecting the revenue to pay the bills.
Right.
But managing the people here, I mean, you know, they're all priorities. And all of the professionals here and all of our managers here are a very high priority to us. Because as I said before, they're the folks who differentiate us from everybody else in this business. And certainly from the data aggregators and keyword search firms. It's a balance that we've just learned to work through over the years. And I think we're doing it effectively. Every day I wonder how we could do it better. One of the ways is this platform we're talking about, which is really, I don't want to talk about it in terms of a software program. It's more of a database to enable our staff to work more efficiently. And then on the client end, it's going to allow our clients to use that information more effectively. But we spend a lot of the time in this business too, you know, managing client issues, managing client advocacy issues, and managing, helping them to manage the lobbyists and staff that work with them, and to balance their own priorities and their own issues, and really helping them to do their jobs more effectively. So, and to manage the clients, frankly. And so, you know, any given day, all of that stuff has to get done, and it can be a handful.
And let me also add, I mean, one of the ways we manage the company is the way the company is sort of run and has always been run, which is we have sort of a flat organization, especially in the senior parts of the company, in that, you know, when we bring on a client, we have a, you know, a group of people who do issue management, have a variety of different relationship skills, and we bring all of that to every client. We don't sort of stovepipe any client under one person that's managing them. We do obviously have client managers, but we reach across the expertise of our company for pretty much every client we have to bring, you know, if we have a person here who runs our AG practice, if they need AG help.
Steve, right?
Steve Arthur, yes.
Yep. I was going to say, you can't go to an event without seeing a stateside person. Whether it's NCSL in LA, Steve, I saw him in an AG
event. We cover
event.
A lot of ground, yeah.
Absolutely.
Stephanie at municipal events.
And before any of those events, such as an AG event, which there tend to be
a lot of them,
many, many AG events, so God bless Steve for traveling all around to those. But we sit down and figure out which clients we need to do work for, not just Steve's clients. So, and for, you know, I had an issue with a client that we don't normally do AG work for that arose, and he handled it, you know, obviously for this client. Mm-hmm. And so we pretty much approach every thing that we do like that, and so we tend to cover a lot of space for all of our clients. And so I think that's a lot of the reason, you know, in terms of dividing up responsibility. It sort of naturally divides both between Mike and I, as well as between our staff, because of the way we run the company, essentially. So.
Yep, yep. And unlike, you don't take a fee in the relationship between your clients and the state lobbyists.
No, we refer those as part of the client services that we provide.
Yeah, and I would say and one of the things that we do, probably to our detriment, we're very strict about conflicts, and that is not just for the consulting and issue management work, it's for our monitoring work as well. And the reason we apply that to our monitoring is that we really try to provide a high level of service to our clients and really have to understand their issues, why they care about them. And, you know, also we provide a lot of follow-up support to our clients in the monitoring. So we really won't work for clients on two sides, or opposite sides, I should say, of an issue.
Okay. Things have changed so much in the past 5 years with, you know, social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. What are the changes that you all have seen the most drastic that have been different than maybe 10 years ago when, you know, none of this was being used?
You mean in terms of communications means?
Yeah, in terms of tracking, in terms of staff, in terms of client expectations.
Well, there's a lot more information that's available out there. It needs a lot more vetting, but there's certainly more information you can find out there on the internet.
Right.
I mean, there's anybody can use the internet to find a tremendous amount of issue information on issues that they may be engaging in the state. What's happened on our end then is it's put a lot more pressure on us to get information out more quickly to our mm-hmm. clients. But again, one of the things that we put a real premium on here is not only how quickly we can get information to our clients, but the accuracy and the quality of the information is just as important. And I think most of our clients recognize that they would rather wait a little bit to get you know, information that's been fully vetted and analyzed. before getting information, raw data that's just been dumped on their desk. I think that the clients, there are clients certainly who want information right away or will demand it right away, but I think you could still, you know, you could still make a lot of mistakes acting on information that, that comes out immediately. I mean, look at all the issues that go on in this town when tweets go out or, you know, information's released on social media or somebody trips across something over the internet and it's absolutely inaccurate.
Right. Right.
You know, mistakes are made. But again, I mean, that's the challenge here. How you know, it's balancing, accurate and quality information with the timeliness of putting it in our clients' hands and helping them engage it.
And that's why our clients rely on us. I mean, they expect us to help them do their job, so they can't do their jobs well if they're not getting, you know, accurate information.
Right. So. Much different world today than the early 90s when you started. And we're probably,
you were willing to sit around and wait for
right. Somebody's right. Making copies at a state capitol and we, faxing it to you.
We actually used to send reports to our clients via FedEx, and I will say that as
even via verb. Fax. I mean, think about that.
Since they're a client.
Dude, I joke, I'm not even sure we have a fax machine in here anymore.
I bet you don't anymore.
Yeah. I mean, do you?
We do not.
Yeah.
But it's funny, I still have the fax number on my business card. I think it's been defunct for 3 years.
Yeah.
Well, look, this is not going to air until after September 18th, so your secret is safe. We won't, we'll promote this right after. This has been really neat. We're glad you took the time. I know you got busy schedules, so thank you very much.
We appreciate it.
Thank you. I mean, this has been by far the busiest year I remember.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, being here. I mean, that's not just because I'm older and slowing down. I think it's really been busier.
And why?
I just think that there's, you know,
because there's so much going on.
There's so much going on. There's a lot of client interest in the state and local space. Some of the dysfunction down at the end of the mall is driving business and issues down to the state level. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's more red state capitals than there ever has been, and yet there's more legislative activity going on and regulatory activity going on in those state capitals than there ever has been. So that's not all of that is to say that where you had conservatives that have always argued that there should be less government, to me it seems like that they may still think that way, but the work is getting pushed down from the federal level down to the state level because they're just not getting much done up here. It's not as productive as it used to be. I don't know. It's for everybody else to decide whether that's good or bad. But the work's coming. The work is definitely going from the federal level down to the state level, and even down to the local level.
Local governments have become much more active than they used to be, which is why that practice is growing. They're just doing more things at the local level.
Yeah, we were talking to someone earlier today who got a bill out of the House down here in Washington, unanimous, and the Senate will not take it up because they just, you know, nothing is going to move. But it's interesting you say that. A lot more red capitals, but, there's still a lot more activity, kind of not what you would expect.
Yeah, it's a juxtaposition, I suppose. But I really think it's because it's not because conservatives in those capitals have thought that they all of a sudden like more government intervention.
It's just nothing's happening here.
It's just nothing's happening here, and the work is landing on their doorsteps.
Well, states have to grapple with the concept that they actually have to run the state.
Right.
And if they don't get stuff done.
And balance the budgets.
And they have to balance their budgets. Most of them
do.
Constitutional.
Right.
State constitutions. But, you know, at the end of the day, they also need their folks happy. And they don't have the luxury of sitting around being partisan and not getting anything done.
Right. And not balancing the budget. Right.
Correct.
Yeah. Right. All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Great.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. There it is. Stateside Associates. Michael and Mark, I hope you enjoyed it. If any of you state lobbyists are in Washington, D.C., I strongly encourage you to go by and see them. Not maybe specifically them, but go by and see somebody you know at Stateside, whether it's Stephanie Reich or any of the other people there. Remember to subscribe to the show. You can leave comments. You can check us out on Twitter @The Lobbying Show and on Facebook. Have a great week. See you next Monday.